T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Emmanuel Acho at 1:30 p.m. You do not want to miss this interview. Emmanuel Acho, employee of ESPN, former pro football player, has just launched a series called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And basically what he's trying to do is start a dialogue, especially for white people. And his tweet, you can go to our station page right now at 95.7 The Game on Twitter and check out the video if you haven't watched it. And it starts with, "Dear white people," the tweet begins, "Dear white people, for days you've asked me what you can do to help. I finally found an answer. Let your guard down and listen." And it's a 10-minute segment followed Acho, a former center linebacker at the University of Texas and a current contributor to ESPN's morning show, Get Up. He addresses questions posed to him by his white friends. It's an interesting dialogue here. Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. Go to our Twitter page right now at 95.7 The Game. Emmanuel Acho will join us at 1:30. Really looking forward to that. Steiny and Guru were talking about Tony Jones. And Steiny, I want to leave the floor to you for a second here about what Tony Jones wrote over the weekend about his story and how, you know, sports not being here to serve as a deodorant for the real issue, how he's happy about that, how he's happy about sports not being here right now.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said, you know, this is – sports would have maybe diluted this. I think basically, you know, he's in a way he's kind of talking to people like you, Bonte, who are just monster sports fans. And now, you know, there's no sports to watch, so – this is what you have to focus on. But not just you. It's mostly, you know, this now white people have to focus on this. Like, there's no outlet for them to just watch sports. So there's nowhere to hide now. You know what I mean? You can't. Right. Or if you're hiding, that in itself is of a message. It's like what's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. It's time for people to start saying that for what it is.
Yeah, I like the sound of that. You know, you can't hide, and the elephant is which was out the bag. Yeah, you know what?
Cats out of the room.
Cats out the bag. Elephant. Damn, Guru, forget your analogies here.
Yeah, Guru, go. The elephant in the bag. I like that.
Yeah, right.
One.
No, the elephant in the room. But I've been talking rats on this show, so I forgot the cats out the bag. But anyway, you're right. And
rats.
Maybe that'll help us as a culture. That'll help us unite. And again, every cop's not bad. Every non-black person's not prejudiced. They're not. We know this. But it's about having these conversations. And when we have our young man on, I mean, that was phenomenal. And I'm curious just to ask him, I don't want to answer for him. I wonder if he's lost any friends that way, trying to maybe have that conversation where it didn't go over well, because I know I have, but we'll see when he gets on. But Steiny, that was well said. You know, you can't hide from it.
No doubt. No. Let's play a little snippet of what Emmanuel Acho said during his platform on his video. Uncomfortable conversation with the black person. Here's what Emmanuel Acho had to say. Here's a short snippet of the 10-minute video.
Welcome to the first of hopefully many episodes of Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. In the midst of all this chaos in our world, so many of y'all have reached out to me, and by y'all, I mean white people. have reached out to me asking, how can I help? How can I join in? How can I stand with you? So I've created this for you. Because in order to stand with us and people that look like me, you have to be educated on issues that pertain to me and fully educated so that you can feel the full level of pain, so that you can have full understanding. I fervently believe that if the white person is your problem, only the white person can be your solution. And so this is made for you, my white brothers and sisters, to increase your level of understanding so that you can increase your level of compassion and lead ultimately to change. So consider this a safe space to answer so many questions that I've seen from y'all. The first question I've seen a lot of, Emmanuel, why are y'all rioting? I understand protesting, but why riot? And to that I submit this. MLK said that rioting is the language of the unheard. For years, black people have tried peacefully protesting, going back to 1965 and before with the Selma March, and that didn't work. And then in 2016, Colin Kaepernick, he took a knee, and that agenda got moved to a flag, which was never the goal. He just wanted to raise awareness on social injustice. So that didn't work. And so now we've seen riots because black people and hurt people are trying to get the attention of the oppressor. They're trying to raise awareness of the oppression.
Just a little sample of what Emmanuel Acho had to say. If you haven't watched the full video, the full 10-minute video, go to our Twitter page at 95.7 The Game to watch the full interview. Emmanuel Acho will join us at 1:30 here in about 22 minutes. 22 minutes here on BSNG.
We talked about... go ahead, Stoney.
Go, Stoney. I think he's coughing.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Bless you, Stoney.
I had a call.
Stoney, you're doing a great job.
What did I miss?
Nothing. Just your reaction to what you heard. No, okay. I was saying earlier we had talked about what we want from our athletes and what we don't want. Do you care? And I told you I'm on the side of, you know, if you feel that way, I'm fine if you say something. If not, I could give a damn. But I don't know if you saw where Popovich – I'm thinking Stan Van Gundy and some other coaches, Doc Rivers, they have like this committee that they just implemented now to where they'll be the voice for their players that feel like, you know, their voice is not being heard. So I just kind of read that just now and it kind of just slapped me in the face. Like, I mean, that's progress in itself. That's not going to end racism, but it's not about that. It's about, you know, just reaching out and putting your hand out to the said black player or minority, like, hey, look, if you feel like, you know, you don't have a voice, here's a platform and a committee, your coaches, I mean, top Hall of Fame coaches that are willing to help you get your message out, whatever that message may be. So I don't know if you guys saw that, but it kind of just hit me in the cardiac muscle, like, you know, who am I to kind of rate on that parade? I mean, kudos to the coaches for even putting that together, you know?
I know what you're talking about. It's the National Association, I think, of Basketball Coaches. Yeah, and they put out a statement. I mean, look, if any coach of a basketball team should be interested in this issue, I would think. Any basketball fan, I think this would be an issue. And, like, this is kind of what I mean. Like, there's no doubt that part of what formed me is that, you know, I played basketball and I was exposed to more black people probably than most. And so it's just like that's a good thing. You know, it's like a good thing. It's a very good thing. And anybody who's involved in basketball and who knows that, obviously, a lot of black people play basketball, and the NBA and college is primarily African American players. I mean, I feel like I do a show with two black guys. All right, I covered the NBA for 20 years. It's like, I'm not saying I'm an expert on any of this, but it's like I feel like I can talk a little bit about why I'm more apt to support what's going on and criticize it. I mean, that's obvious to me.
No doubt about that, Stoney. Well, and I'm just thinking about what Emmanuel Acho's had to say, what Tony Jones has had to say, and you know, what Rob Latal had to say yesterday and Ian Williams, what everybody's out there saying. And, you know, we talk about the opportunities we have that are presented to ourselves, white, black, Chinese, doesn't matter. You talked about Steiny being fortunate to play basketball, be in his locker rooms. I talk about just being raised in San Francisco, where it's a lot different than everywhere else. I was raised in San Francisco where, you know, at my lunch table, there's an Asian guy, there's a white guy, there's a black guy, there's a Filipino, Latino guy. Like, I was exposed to all different ethnicities to where it helped me and it shaped me to where it's like, dude, we're all just one, but that's just here in San Francisco. You know, I'm not, a lot of people are fortunate. It's a lot different in San Francisco to say Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's a lot different than Montgomery, Alabama. You know, it's a lot different than Mississippi. So it's, we talk about being fortunate and having this perspective on life. We are fortunate to be in this position. And, you know, no doubt, I probably would look at things differently if I was born and raised in Arkansas or Louisiana, like people I know where their viewpoints are just extremely different because of what they experienced in those states down south.
And I remember, and I can attest to, you know, just playing youth baseball, basketball, and football, where a lot of my black friends didn't have their dad around for whatever reason. And I didn't know then how lucky I was. But a lot of people's, what do they say? The black man CNN is rap music. And growing up when NWA had first hit and I was just getting to high school, they had a song, F the Police. And I hadn't had, at James Logan High School as a freshman, I hadn't had any bad experiences with the police, but I listened to their diaries. I listened to other rap groups. And what I'm saying, fellas, is you hear these stories and they're embedded in your mind, but I never once said, oh, because NWA said this or Tupac said this or Public Enemy said this. But what those groups were pointing out was police brutality. And as I got older, as I start driving and I would get pulled over and profiled, it's kind of like, damn, that's what Chuck D was talking about. That's what Ice Cube was talking about. This is real, you know, and it's just kind of, you know, I had my dad there to kind of steer me the right way, but a lot of guys didn't. And what I'm saying to that is, those songs weren't lies. And again, all police aren't bad, but it was almost like a diary of what you're about to embark on as a young black man. And now that I'm older and I got kids, I'm trying to pass that down so they'll be prepared for that day or that situation that arises. And it's just interesting. And I guess my point being, fellas, is I've been out of high school for umpteen years, and it's still going on. We still got the George Floyds, the Trayvon Martins, and it's just amazing to me that as much as we say we've made progress, at the end of the day, fellas, on that avenue, the uncomfortable avenue, we really haven't.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Just going back to
– sorry, no, I went off Jones right had, there. But
yeah. No, you're right, Guru. And I just – when you're speaking, it just made me think again of Tony Jones' article in The Athletic, and you brought up how this is still going on, Goo. And just – there's a paragraph in here where he talked about living in Minnesota, and he went to the water fountain to drink some water, and a white kid right after him went to go drink water, but he let the water run for a second, and his friend said, "What are you doing?" And the kid said, "I need to let their black run out of it." It was just like, wait a minute. Tony Jones is not much older than me. You know, this is in the 80s. It's like, wait a minute. What? Like, you got a kid here's Minnesota in the 80s. In the 80s. So it just makes me think that everybody has a different story. And every black person I know has a story about a run-in with the police or how they were, hey, man, this guy cuffed me for a routine traffic stop. Like, everybody has a story. It's just – and it's in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and I just hope, man, I just really hope – I keep saying this, but I just really hope this finally has opened up the eyes. And it does feel like that. You know, we started the show, and we all talked about what we learned from the events after yesterday, and I have learned that more white people are willing to listen and learn about what's going on in this country and what black people go through on a daily basis.
I mean, that's our responsibility at this point. I don't think there's any doubt about it. So, and it's just like the other thing is it's not that hard. It's like the golden rule. Treat others how you'd like to be treated. You know, it's like, what's so hard about that? Yeah. I mean, I obviously it is, but, you know, that's the other thing is that we all, you know, anybody out there who's a Christian knows that we're not treating everybody like we would treat ourselves. That's, we know that. And so that's why we got to get better.
I got a direct message from somebody, I won't even name them, somebody on Twitter that said, you know, get my facts straight when I'm talking about, you know, police brutality and black men dying on camera. And as offended as I am, I can honestly say, and I don't want an award for this. I wouldn't be happy if I had saw it. But when we talk about what we've seen on camera, guys die, black men, at the hands of the police, there's not a white person's name or somebody non-black that comes to my mind off the top like a George Floyd. So for the person that sent me that message, miss me with that, bruh, because I can't remember, and I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but you don't see it, and it's not as prevalent as we see it, you know, every other 6 months here with black men being killed on camera. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? There's going to be a lot of nasty messages like that. I'm sure we've all gotten nasty messages about this situation. We've got nasty messages. We all have in our careers. And, you know, you see situations like this exposes people. It exposes people for who they really are. When, you know, I see a lot of people saying, man, I've lost 20 followers. I've lost this. I lost about 20 wow. followers. That's fine. Who cares? Like, I don't care whether or not I lose a follower or not. I'm glad they stopped following me because it shows me who they are. It shows me what they really believe in. It shows us that our viewpoints are different. And you know what? I don't want people around me like that. So, you know, they could come with the nasty messages. They could call you all kind of names, but it's not going to stop us from what we believe is right. And what's right is stopping police brutality, is stopping gun control, and stopping giving people gun licenses who really don't need a gun in their hands. It's just, that's what it's about. It's about spreading positivity, man, and trying to get to a point where we do all love each other. Well, right now, that's not the case, and we need to continue to hammer that point home that we need a change in this damn country. We need a change.
What did you two make of Anthony Lynn, the Chargers head coach, who said he's looking for more than statements? And again, this is coming from the guy that said, I don't give a damn what the coach says. But in this instance, you know, like my alcohol, I mean, that was pretty strong. That was strong for him to say that, fellas.
Your alcohol is not strong, Guru. Mimosas aren't strong.
Yeah, a little bit. But that's strong from him. I mean, again, and I think that's what side of the street I'm on. You know? You can't judge people's feelings and Tiger Woods, the criticism he's getting for what his message didn't say. I guess what I'm saying, fellas, at the end of the day, however you concoct your message, it's not, whoever you are, it's not going to end racism, right? So that's how I'm looking at it. Like, I appreciate the effort, but it's not going to stop this beast that we face, this uphill battle that we've been losing for hundreds of years.
I mean, no, but it's corny, but you know, everybody's got to do their part if they care. If you care, you'll do your part, or you'll try to do your part, or you'll just try. If you're not, I don't know, if your heart's got hate in it, you're not gonna. And hopefully more people have love in their heart than hate. You know,
no doubt.
And the other thing is, you know, you're not, you can disagree politically, you know, with a lot of stuff, but what happened to George Floyd, it's got nothing to do with politics. It has to do with right and it has to do with wrong. And we all know what happened was wrong, period.
Yep. No doubt. No doubt about it. Emmanuel Acho coming up at 1:30 p.m. He just launched his series called The Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man. And as of this morning, the video received nearly 870,000 views, over 30,000 likes, 14,000 retweets, over 1,000 comments, and I'm sure some of the comments were good, some of the comments were bad, but the fact that white people are willing to start a dialogue, yesterday I didn't have any hope that change was going to come after 37 years of being on this earth and seeing that things continue to play out the way they have. I didn't have any hope. And one thing that Rob Latall said yesterday that stuck out to me said, you know what? You got to have hope. You got to have hope. And this dialogue here where white people are reaching out to Emmanuel Acho, because I've had a lot of white people reach out to me, it means that, you know what, I do have some hope. They're starting to learn. They want to know more. They want to know what they can do to help. And I think right now, you know, and Steiny, you've been a leader here. You've said it as well. Just sitting back and learning and listening is probably the best thing white people can do right now. And the fact that they are willing to listen, I think it's a step in the right direction. It's not a big step, not a major step, because we're not going to see progress here until November when voting happens. But I think it is. It gives me a glimmer of hope, fellas.
Well, I mean, what gives me a glimmer of hope is, believe it or not, the young people. And I'm actually not even talking about like 25, 30 year olds. I'm talking about 15 to 20 year olds. Protest yesterday at Oakland Tech down to Jack London, it was incredible. Yeah. It was absolutely incredible. Like, I really think, you know, I look at my high school daughter who's going to college. She's so far like ahead of where I was in terms of understanding these kind of issues. I mean, I didn't even care about these kind of issues in high school. I mean, I just didn't. And I know that might sound, I played basketball and I was into all that, but political stuff I couldn't have cared less about. I think the high school kids and the kids in younger generation in general is way ahead, and that's what gives me some hope, assuming they keep this enthusiasm up.
And real quick, that's what has me feeling a bit, not melancholy, but like, did I miss a moment for my two sons to be a part of that? You know, to 20, 30 years from now, you know, I hear you, B, but I just, and I can get out there tonight if I want to, but what if something were to happen to all three of us or them two, then what would I say? Like, why, you know, I would be criticized. You're damned if you do, but damned if you don't. But Steiny, that's profound, because I should have looked and thought of man and woman is, we'll go be a part of that, let them experience that, and quit thinking the worst. But as a parent, I was thinking the worst and didn't take them there. And I just feel like I miss a moment for them, you know?
Nah, you didn't, Koo. You didn't, Koo. I mean, you're supporting from your house. You got a family. You want to keep them safe. I get it. I haven't been out there protesting, you know?
I mean, I was like, I don't know about this. You know, I was.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
right.
I mean, look, we're still in a big city. This is still big stuff. I mean, I gave them a don't be screwing around out there. This ain't no joke, you know. But, and you know, that means nothing when they leave and I'm not around. So, I have no problem with a parent telling one of their children, yeah, I don't want you to do that.
Okay.
I mean, that's just the choice. I almost
did
it.
That's what the mom was saying. You're crazy. What are you doing? And that's kind of like, I was looking like, I didn't tell her. Like,
I mean, we weren't far off from where you were. We had a discussion about it, and we just, you know, we decided we decided to go ahead. Just try to be as smart as you possibly can.
And they'll never forget that, Steiny Bonte.
I don't think so. I think you're right that.
No doubt. Here's what's coming up on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, Emmanuel Acho, ESPN. It's going to be a lot of fun to have him on here. Just started a video series called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. He's going to join us in the next 5 minutes to get some dialogue on this, why he started it, and what he's doing here to fight the good fight. Emmanuel Acho coming up here on BSNG, and that's all sponsored by Chilton Auto Body.
Hey.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
We got our man Emmanuel Acho here on the airways, thankfully here. He just started a dialogue, Uncomfortable Conversations with the Black Man, former NFL player, former University of Texas Longhorn. And I don't think my man Emmanuel has an ounce of body fat, which makes me completely jealous at my age here. Emmanuel, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us here on Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game. We've been talking about your video here that we've all watched here, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, and me being a Black man, Daryl the Guru Johnson being Black. We know what you're going through. We know what you're going through when it comes to the text for white people. Just tell us about some of the texts you received and what spurred you to be to start this video and this dialogue here.
Man, gentlemen, thank you for having me. I think first and foremost, everyone was asking me, like, hey, Acho, what's the move? What are we going to do? And what spurred me to start this dialogue is simply this. Gentlemen, there is a lack of education and exposure amongst races. Let me give you an analogy that will make it clear. I'm first-generation American. I was my parents were born in Nigeria, and so when they came to the U.S., they didn't have any dogs, no animals. We didn't have any dogs. I didn't grow up with pets, gentlemen. And so as a kid, I got attacked by a dog. So now, 20 years later, whenever I'm in the park with my friends and they go up petting dogs, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this dog might attack you. And that's because I didn't have any exposure to dogs growing up, so I can't decipher between a dog that's a threat and a dog that is a friendly animal. In the same sense, I draw this parallel. Because white people didn't grow up around Black people, they can't decipher between a Black man that might be a threat versus a Black man. Because white people didn't grow up around Black people, they can't decipher between a Black man that might be a threat versus a Black man that's just Black. When Black people don't grow up around white people, they can't decipher between a white person that's a racist versus a white person that's just white. And so because of that, I realized, you know what, man? There are so many questions that my white brothers and sisters have that they never get answered, and so they live in ignorance. And they never get them answered because they don't have Black friends to ask or they don't feel like they have a safe space. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to invite everybody into my seeming living room and have an uncomfortable conversation with a Black man. Because white people have always wondered, man, why do you say white privilege exists? They've wondered, man, why do y'all care more about white on Black crime than Black on Black crime? They've wondered, why can y'all say the N-word but we can't? They've wondered, why are y'all rioting? Why not just peacefully protest? Rioting does nothing. And I said, you know what? Let me take 9.5 minutes and answer all these questions.
Well, you're probably going to need more than 9.5 minutes, I would think, right? You're going to need 999,000 minutes, I would think. Let me ask you a specific question. All lives matter. I've heard, you know, we have a radio personality in Sacramento near us who's just suspended or gone on administrative leave because he used the term "all lives matter" as a response to DeMarcus Cousins actually tweeting, and I'm going to take him at his word. And I've heard other people say this too. It's like, oh, I didn't know that was really bad. I didn't know all lives matter. You tell me what the problem is with all lives matter.
So inherently, there is no problem, so to speak, with all lives matter because all lives do matter. There is an ignorance with all lives matter. Let me explain. If you all were to walk into your neighborhood and you saw one house was on fire, you wouldn't call the fire department and be like, all the houses are burning down. No. You'd be like, hey, there's a house that's on fire. Can y'all please come help put this fire out? Every October in the NFL when I was playing in the league, there was Breast Cancer Awareness Month. That's not to say other forms of cancer don't matter. It's to simply raise awareness on this one specific form, because this is the issue we're trying to address. To say Black lives matter, it's by no means to undermine other lives, and it's not saying that all lives don't matter. It's just simply saying, hey, right now, Black people are dying on camera because of hate crimes and racial inequality. They're dying on camera, mind you, because of racism. And more than anything, several times these white officers are getting gassed. And so when we say Black Lives Matter, it's not to be rude. We're just trying to draw attention to one specific issue. And so I charge and challenge those who are saying all lives matter. We understand that. And we're not saying that's not the case. But that would be as ignorant as seeing a house burning down in a neighborhood and being like, but all these other houses are important too. So that's my thoughts in regards to it. It's not that all lives matter is rude. All lives matter is just ignorant.
Emmanuel, as fascinating as that video was, I just shared with the guys a little earlier that as I was growing up and I heard NWA and their message about the police or Public Enemy or Tupac, you know, they were always in a tone of they were angry and aggressive. And I get it. And I was just sharing with them that that's kind of how I thought you had to get the message across. But in your video, what captivated me was your tone. Did you once at all think, you know what, I'm going to do this video with this tone? Is that just who you are by nature? Is that your personality? Or did you once think, you know what, I might turn the volume up because I appreciate the way you went about it, the fact that you weren't angry for people that aren't black. Like, not that there was an agenda, but he's just talking to us. Man, when did you decide that that's the course of action you were going?
That's a phenomenal awareness that only a black person can truly understand. So remember, I'm first generation American. And so while I'm 6'2", 240 pounds and as black as can be, I don't harbor the same pain and hate in my heart that so many of my black friends do because of hundreds and hundreds of years of oppression and slavery. And so while I fully understand the black struggle because I'm black, I don't harbor the same amount of pain that they do. And so I realize in order to get my white friends to understand this message, I can't deliver the message aggressively because I fully understand my white friends because I grew up with them in that culture. And so I said, okay, black people, I feel you, I am you, I hear you, but they're not going to hear you if you're yelling and screaming. So let me lay aside my pain for a moment and speak in a manner that can be digested. It's kind of like if you bring food to the table and it got too much spice on it, I'm not going to eat it. It don't matter how hungry I am. So let me take off some of the spice, which is anger. Let me take off some of the herbs, which is pain, and let me just serve this meal that can be digested.
Emmanuel Acho here on 95.7 The Game with Bonte, Steiny, and Guru. Emmanuel, you talk about a culture, right? Back in 2013, you were a member of the Philadelphia Eagles, and you joined the team later on that fall in which that same season, Riley Cooper, one of your former teammates, was denied backstage access at a Kenny Chesney concert in July of that same year, and he said some things that he shouldn't have said. He said the N-word. I want to ask you, Emmanuel, being a teammate of his and being black and seeing, knowing that Riley Cooper's in that locker room, what was that environment like in Philadelphia, knowing that Riley Cooper was letting off racial slurs when he had no business doing it? What was it like in that locker room, in that culture, knowing that Riley Cooper had done that summer?
Man, it was there was a lot of turmoil because, like I said, man, I don't think, bro, this day and age, and it's a shame on us, that I don't think we understand the weight of that word, both black people and white people. I had to go back and look it up and look up really the pain so I could understand, dude. The N-word is synonymous with oppression. It's synonymous with a black person being equated to dirt. It's synonymous with being no greater than a slave. Remember, Frederick Douglass, the black abolitionist, he wrote that when talking about his master, that reading would spoil an N-word. Like, that is how black people were viewed. And so when Riley said that, man, there was so much turmoil because black people have so much pain when you hear that word coming from a white person. Mind you, black people have rephrased that word into a term of endearment. And I know some white people are like, well, if black people can say it, how come I can't say it? Please truthfully listen to and educate yourselves on what that word meant. Like, remember, the governor of Arkansas, I believe, in the 1960s, he said, white people will not go to school with N-words as long as I'm alive. That was in the 60s, my friend. That was not that long ago. So although we hear it in rap songs and black people have made it culturally appropriate, which amongst black culture it is appropriate, let's not get it twisted, I think white people have to understand when that word comes out of their mouth, it elicits a visceral reminder and reaction of slavery.
Are you more hopeful right now or worried?
I honestly, now I'm hopeful, dude. If I could tell you all the responses that I've gotten off my video, simply like, man, I cried with my wife over this and we shared it with our kids. Man, I never understood black people had to go through this. Thank you for telling me in a manner in which I understand. Man, I'm having discussions with my white friends about this. I just got a text from my friend in France who saw the video. Like, I'm hopeful. And I'm hopeful because all it takes is a bit of dialogue. That's it. Obviously, the looting and the rioting, that stuff is concerning. That stuff is worrisome. But if people would truly take a moment and realize if Emmanuel Acho can have that much of an impact, imagine the impact you can have. And that's so I'm hopeful, dude. I genuinely am.
Can you share with us when you saw your initial reaction when you saw the first time you saw the George Floyd video? And real quick, Emmanuel, have you ever had a bad encounter with the police?
Only really kind of racial profiling incident I had with the police was I lived in an affluent neighborhood, Highland Park, where Matthew Stafford went to high school in Dallas, Texas. So I lived adjacent to that neighborhood. I didn't live there. My teammates lived there. And so after a team dinner in high school, I left the neighborhood, got pulled over for no reason. Cop had no reason to pull me over. He like checked for my license, registration, and then just let me go as if I didn't belong in that neighborhood. That was my only real racial profiling incident. And remind me the other question you just asked, my man.
Went through your head when you initially saw for the first time the George Floyd video.
We could hear it. We could hear it in your voice.
I'll say, I guess that, whatever I just said in the last 10 seconds. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the dude was crying out for his mother, who was dead. And so imagine where he was in a state of his life at that moment, as his life is being taken from him due to a corrupt police officer with a knee on his neck, and he's crying out for his deceased mother. I don't know, man. I don't know. I was heartbroken, dude.
Yeah, we all are. Yeah.
No, we are. And that's why, Emmanuel, yesterday we had this show, and I thank our boss for giving us the platform to even talk about these issues. I was broken after what I saw last weekend. I know you saw the speech of Killer Mike down in Atlanta, what he had to say. I've listened to all the powerful speeches from black people on the street, on CNN or whatnot. I was broken. But you talk about having some hope here due to your dialogue with white people now. Is it gonna? What else is gonna need to? Is it gonna just? Do we need the voting? Do we need to? Does it start at the top? Like how? Because I'm still trying to. Even though I'm hearing everything, I'm watching these videos and I'm watching your video, and I appreciate these videos. I'm still having a hard time believing that things are going to be different.
Well, let me tell you, dude. If I was the ultimate legislator, I think it's as simple as this: I would mandate integration, and I don't mean tolerate integration. I mean mandate it. If we really want to make a change. Now, keep in mind, bro, and this is going to show you if America has truly come far. Imagine what would happen if we tried to mandate integration. Imagine the backlash. But if we really want to make a change, you have to mandate integration because mandating integration would mandate exposure. And so I think everyone within their domain has to find a way to do that. Whether you're a pastor and you have small groups, whether you're a coach and you have teams, very reminiscent of Remember the Titans, which so many people, I'm sure, listening to the show have seen that movie. Whether you're a CEO of a Fortune 500 company and you're assigning group projects for different individuals, if you really want an action step from me, if I can be honest with you, that's the only action step. Because the only way to fully get knowledge is to fully be exposed. But you can't fully be exposed if you have no exposure. And that is my solution. Now, is that actually practical? Because God only knows the pushback when you try to mandate integration. I don't know. But that is the most logical to me and psychological step.
Do you think, like, to me, I agree with everything you said, and it's why I think sports can be at the forefront of this, because it's not mandated integration, but it's integration. And, you know, I was just telling these guys, I wouldn't be the person I am today had I not, like, played basketball, for example, mm-hmm. and been exposed to more different people. So, it sounds like you're saying you recognize the importance of sports in this dialogue.
Yeah, of course. But remember, sports is all but mandated integration. You feel me? Like, you're not going to play football without having some wide O linemen, some black receivers, some black DBs.
Oh, okay.
Like, that is mandated integration. You're not going to play basketball without having a cold three-point shooter who in high school who's probably a white dude, without having, like, sports do mandate integration. They just do it naturally.
Right.
And that is the beauty of sports. Is you'll see so many people speaking out on this in the sports world who are like, man, I didn't even realize this existed. Because that's what you do naturally. But the majority of America doesn't necessarily play sports. Specifically, doesn't play it beyond high school. And so that is exactly what I'm preaching and teaching about, which is why I think sports are so vital.
Emmanuel, yesterday on air, I apologized to Colin Kaepernick. And the reason I did is on his journey initially, I didn't think he was putting it all out there. And I was telling him, you know, he ain't talking enough for me. But when it's all said and done, he basically traded in his career on a cause that now is just prevalent. And I thought about him when I saw the George Floyd video, like, this is what he was doing. Can you share with us your thoughts on Cap before and after? Have they changed it all? And, you know, because I just feel kind of guilty that I didn't give him his props for standing up for a cause then. And now look where we're at. Just, you know, everything's on fire because of police brutality.
So here's what I'll say about Cap. I appreciated his heart. I loved his heart because all Cap wanted was to do was to raise awareness for police brutality. Now, Cap made some pivotal mistakes, unfortunately, wearing pig socks. Right. If you give people a reason not to listen to you, I promise they're going to take it. I promise you they will. So when Cap wore those pig socks, people are like, he's disrespecting our police. The national anthem thing, again, if you give people a reason not to listen, they won't. I have no problem with Cap for doing that, but it's primarily because Nate Boyer, a man who served in our Army for decades, I played football with him at Texas, a former Green Beret. Please look him up. Nate is the one who told Colin Kaepernick to take a knee, because Nate said, a man who has fought at war, who has had to bury his own brothers, Nate said that taking a knee would bring more respect to the flag. However, the agenda got moved and said that it was all about a flag. So I respect Kaepernick. I respect the heck out of him as a man, and I respect everything he stood for. Remember, in 2020, it's very hard to assassinate a person, like with MLK. God rest his soul. So you can assassinate his career, which is blatantly obvious. Is Kaepernick the best quarterback in the NFL? Absolutely not. But during the 2017 and 2018 season, is it clear as day that Kaepernick should have been on a roster? Absolutely. So I'm a fan of Kaepernick. He did take some missteps, but I love what he stood for.
In 30 seconds, Emmanuel, we thank you for the time. We're up against it, but in a short answer, is it a good thing that sports are not happening right now? Because I'll admit it, even being a black guy, walking around knowing what people go through, I almost think it's a good thing that sports isn't going on right now, because I've been able to really lock in and educate myself on what's been going on in this country for the last 400 years.
It is a phenomenal thing. Sports has caused America to sit in its sin. Sports has caused America to deal with the stench of its longest air. And so I am thrilled that sports aren't going on, if only that we may solve this issue.
Man, hey, I just want to share with you, Emmanuel, on our text line from the 510. He said, this Acho guy has changed my life from the 925 out here in the East Bay, in the Bay Area. They said, my white ass loves this dude. So your message is getting across to people, and we thank you for sharing that message. If you haven't seen it yet, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, Emmanuel Acho started this dialogue yesterday. You could catch him on ESPN, former NFL player. Emmanuel, we thank you so very much for spending some time and shedding some light on what you're doing here. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, my friends. Y'all be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.